So let's just recap. I'm talking too fast. So number one is, we said, we start off with Hillel, the great Hillel. Hillel had 80 students. The biggest of his students was Rabbi Yonatan ben Uziel. Rabbi Yonatan ben Uziel, who's buried in Amuka. Right, for those who've been to Amuka, it's Segula Fani Yashiduch. Okay. So Amuka is beautiful. It's very beautiful. So it's in the middle of a valley. That's why it's Amuka. It's very, very deep. It's in a valley. You've got to go down the mountains to go to Amuka. Right. So you've got to climb the mountains and you've got to go down the mountains.
Where's it near?
It's near Sfat. It's between.
That's what I thought.
It's near Sfat.
Okay.
All the great rabbis are buried in that area because in the Roman destruction, the only place that survived was the Galil. And the reason why the Galil was the only place that survived was the different generals. Bar Kokhba appointed different generals of different areas. And the general of the Galil was a guy called Josephus. Everyone knows about, right? Josephus. He wrote all the books for the Romans. He was a Roman historian. And some opinion says he was smart. Some opinion says he was a traitor. Because he gave up without a fight. He gave up the Galil without a fight. The Galil was meant to be the hardest place to conquer. And the Romans were coming from Syria. And the Galil, he was meant to stop the Romans. Instead of stopping them,
he joined them.
But because of that, the Galil was not destroyed. That's the reason why the Galil was not destroyed. Every other part of Israel was destroyed at that time. So the Galil was not destroyed. That's why all the rabbis moved to the Galil. And that's why you'll find all the graves of the famous rabbis are buried in the Galil. Because that's the only part of Israel they could live. It was one that was not destroyed. Whereas Judah, near Yerushalayim, was all smashed completely. The Romans smashed it completely. And that's why if you look at the fields, they have big stones in them. Romans put stones in the fields so that Jews could not be farmers anymore. They ruined everything. The land was destroyed by the Romans. They put salt in the fields so they couldn't plant. It was disgusting. They destroyed the whole field. The good part is that no one could live in Israel. For 2,000 years, no one could live in Israel. Only the Jews could make Israel green again. It's amazing. It's a miracle. But it's a prediction already in the prophets. And when you see the trees growing in Israel, that's a sign of the Messianic era is close. It's one of the signs of the Messianic era. So anyway, so Hillel had 80 students. The biggest of them was Rabbi Yonatan ben Uziel, who we have the Targum Yonatan. It's a commentary on the whole Tanakh, written Aramaic for the average man. But over there it says he revealed secrets, which were not allowed to be revealed. He was a very big Kabbalist, Rabbi Yonatan ben Uziel. And therefore, we don't normally learn Talmud Yonatan. Targum Yonatan is not learned so widely. It's not even printed on a regular Chumash. The regular Targum is printed as Onkelos, which there was a convert from the Romans. Aquilus, Roman convert. Aquilus was the nephew of the Emperor Hadrian. He was the nephew of the Emperor Hadrian, and he converted to Judaism. And Hadrian couldn't take it. He says, "Why did you convert to Judaism? I hate the Jews." And Aquilus says, "Because you told me to, Uncle." Uncle says, "I told you to convert to Judaism." He says, "Yeah. I came to you for advice, and you said if you see something going cheap, buy it. If it has value, and sell it when it gets expensive." So I found nothing cheaper today than Jews. Their lives are not worth a penny in the Roman Empire. They are persecuted, but I see it has tremendous value. So I bought Judaism. So that's interesting. So he became a Jew, and Onkelos, the great translator of the Torah into Targum, into the language of Aramaic. So that's printed in every Chumash. But there's another Targum, which is Rabbi Yonatan ben Uziel, which is not printed in every Chumash, but it's more common on Nach, Nevi'im Nekutuvim. Anyway, so Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is the smallest of the students of Hillel, and he has five major students. And these five major students, two of them become the rabbis of Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Eliezer ben Hyrcanus and Rabbi Yeshua ben Hanania. And Rabbi Akiva, 24,000 students, died during the Lag BaOmer. I can imagine he must have been devastated. His 24,000 students. 24,000 students die. What would you do if 64 years old, your life's work, your 24,000 students all gone, or you give up? Well, Rabbi Akiva, the fortunate thing for us is that's something we know as Jews, we never give up. Never give up. There's always hope. Hatikva, there's always hope. We always live in hope. And therefore, what does he do? He continues. And this time he has five students. Just like Rabbi Yochanan and Zakkai, five students, it seems like it's not quantity, it's quality. Five major students. And one of these five students is Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. The other students are Rabbi Meir Bar Hanes, who is also known for his miracle works. And a regular Mishnah, just follows, it says, Stam Mishnah with no name is Rabbi Meir Bar Hanes. Rabbi Meir Bar Hanes was a famous author of the Mishnah. He was the main author of the Mishnah. Rabbi Meir Bar Hanes was the main author of the Mishnah. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, Rabbi Meir Bar Hanes, Rabbi Yehuda Bar Ilai. Rabbi Yehuda Bar Ilai is also buried in that vicinity, same area in the Galil near Sfat. Rabbi Yehuda Bar Ilai, a great man. And there's a yeshiva there, this tomb. There's a massive building now they built. Rabbi Yehuda Bar Ilai, there's a yeshiva there. When I was there in the summer, they were having a party over there, a siyum. So the yeshiva was making a siyum near his kever, learning Torah, and amazing. So people come all over, from all over to go to Rabbi Yehuda Bar Ilai is very big. Rabbi Yossi Bar Chalafta. So Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Eliezer ben Shamua, five great students of Rabbi Akiva. Five students of Rabbi Akiva, each one wrote parts of our Torah today. The Torah we have today, the oral law we have today, are from the five students of Rabbi Akiva. Can you imagine, if Rabbi Akiva would have given up after his 24,000 students died, the Torah would be dead. We wouldn't have any Torah. He didn't give up, and he kept on going. And these five students spread the Torah in Israel. Baruch Hashem, we're so lucky. The Mishnah is basically based on his students. And you'll find the Mishnah, you won't find a single tractate where Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai is not mentioned. He's in every single tractate in the Mishnah. Usually, he's a very lenient opinion in the Mishnah. It's very surprising. Here he is, the big Kabbalist, but he's a very lenient opinion. He's not very strict. And the Talmud says, if you're forced, you have no other choice, Kedai Rabbi Shimon. You can rely on Rabbi Shimon. His opinion is reliable. You can rely on him when you're really in stuck. His lenient opinion, you can rely on him when you're really stuck. So that's Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. But what is Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai famous for? So here is the famous story in the Talmud in Shabbat, in the second chapter of Shabbat, which is interesting because it's on the page called 33, which is the Gematria of Lag Ba'Omer. So I don't know, the rabbis figured this in, but it's on page number 33. So it's very easy to remember. Which page is the story of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai? Lag, page 33. That's interesting. So, it's interesting because there was another rabbi called Rabbi Yehuda ben Giri, and he was appointed by the Romans to be the first speaker at every place. We're going to talk about that. Obviously the first speaker because he was pretty much pro-Roman. So the Romans made him the first speaker. So anyone, if there's a public ceremony, Rabbi Yehuda would be the first one to talk. So now the rabbis are sitting around the table. Once happened, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai were sitting together. And with them was a guy called Rabbi Yehuda ben Gerim who was sitting next to them. So Rabbi Yehuda opened the discussion, and he's always praising the Romans. How great are the deeds of the Romans, Rabbi Yehuda. Tiknu Shvakim, they made beautiful marketplaces. Tiknu Gisharim, they made beautiful bridges. They made Tiknu Merchatzaot, they made beautiful bathhouses. Rabbi Yossi, politician, kept quiet. Don't want to say anything good, nothing bad. Get quiet. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai unfortunately spoke up. He was not happy with the Romans. And he said, everything they made to serve their own needs. They didn't do it for the population, they did it for themselves. They established marketplaces in order to put harlots over there. They made bathhouses in order to beautify their own bodies. They built bridges in order to collect tolls. Sounds very familiar, right? The Gemara relates the aftermath. Rabbi Yehuda ben Gerim went, who saw this, they heard the words, and he went and talked about it to his friends. He talked about these words to his friends. And what happened? Eventually the words went out to the Romans. So the Romans heard the different rabbis' opinions. They heard what's going on. And the Romans said, Yehuda, who elevated the stature of the Romans, he will be elevated. We're going to raise him up, give him a more official position. Yossi, who kept quiet and failed to praise the Romans, has to be exiled to the town of Tzippori, near Tiberia. So imagine, he didn't say anything, and they exiled him. And Shimon, Shegina, and Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai denigrated the Romans, he's going to be executed. So as soon as he heard there's a sentence against him, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai ran away. Him and his son, Rabbi Lazar, ran away and they hid in the Beit Midrash. Every day his wife would come with food and a small pitcher of water, and they would eat to sustain themselves. When the decree intensified, the Romans escalated their hunt for the fugitives. Rabbi Shimon said to his wife, said to her, I can't. I have to run away. And I can't even tell you where I'm going because they may catch you and torture you. And if you know where I am, that's it. So I can't. But one day they'll follow you and they'll see you giving me food. And they'll... So the two found a more secure hiding place. They went and they hid themselves in a cave. Now this cave, where is this cave? This cave is in a small little town called Pekin. Pekin is a Druze town in the Galilee. There used to be a group of 100 Jews over there. It's actually one of the oldest places where there's been non-stop Jewish life for thousands of years. 100 families used to be. And unfortunately, there was like a pogrom. It's interesting. In Israel itself, there's a pogrom in this village. They smashed the cars of these Jews and whatever it is. And a lot of Jews left Pekin. After many thousands of years living in Pekin, they had to leave Pekin. You can look it up. It's very interesting. I think there's one old lady left, one Jewish old lady left. But these Druze, they make their money off the Jewish tourists who come to see the cave of Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai. It says, there it is in Pekin, is the cave. You can go and see the cave. You can even see the carob tree and the stream. They're all over there. So that's where Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai lives. He hid over there with his son. And the food is not brought to them anymore. And a miracle happened. A carob tree and a spring of water were created for them. Apparently these carob trees and the spring was not there before. And they lived on carobs. Listen, I can't even eat one carob. I don't know how they ate carobs. How can you live on carobs? I don't know. No idea what to do. Anyone over here like carobs?
Carobs,
yeah.
With the OB?
OB.
Yeah. Oh, I thought you said carrots.
No, carrots not so bad. You can live on carrots, but not carobs.
Carobs by themselves are not, they're bitter.
They're bitter. Right. But I don't know, I've never had a fresh one. Yeah, well, the dry ones, but
yeah,
the fresh ones.
Right.
But they're hard and they're bitter. How do you live on a carob cut? So that's how they hit. And now the Gemara talks about their daily routine. They would take off their clothes because their clothes are going to wear out. And they'll bury themselves up to the neck in sand. All day long they would study together. Amazing. But they learned, they didn't have books. What are they studying? All by heart. They knew the whole Torah by heart. Rishon Bar Yochai knew the whole Torah by heart. So he's teaching his son. All day long they would learn. When the time for prayers arrived, they would dress and pray. And then again they would take off their clothes, put themselves in sand, so that their clothes would not wear out. They hide in this cave. They don't know how long they're going to be. They dwelt in the cave for 12 years. Right? Living in a cave for 12 years. Amazing. They're learning Torah for 12 years. By the way, that's where the origins of the Zohar came from. It was in this cave where Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, that he had a pen or whatever, but they remembered the first edition of the Zohar. It's called Mishnah Rishona, was apparently written in this cave. 12 years later, Ata Eliyahu Navi. Eliyahu Navi came and he stood by the mouth of the cave and he said, he wasn't talking directly to them, he's just telling them news. Who will inform the son of Yochai that Caesar has died and the decree has been annulled? So they heard this voice come from outside the cave. Who will tell Bar Yochai that it was Eliyahu Navi? Okay, so Rishon Bar Yochai and his son heard this and they came from the cave. They emerged from the cave 12 years later and they couldn't believe what they saw. They saw civilization. They saw people plowing fields, sowing crops. And Rishon bar Yochai got very angry. How can they leave the spiritual world? How can they leave occupying themselves with Torah for occupying themselves with this temporary life? He got very upset. Because here he was, 12 years immersed in Torah. Got to a very high spiritual level. He goes and he sees people just working a normal life. He couldn't take it. So what happened? He heard a voice. The heavenly voice came out. And says, have you emerged to destroy my world? Go back to your cave. It's a very interesting Gemara. But you know, this Gemara is based on another Gemara in Brachot, where there's a big debate between Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai and Rabbi Ishmael. Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai and Rabbi Ishmael. So Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai and Rabbi Ishmael about in the Shema. The Shema says, "Natati esem sadech levimtecha ve'asafta deganecha v'tirosh ha'sarecha," and you will gather your grain. To the Shema, and the Shema, and the blessings in the Shema. The second paragraph of the Shema, we talk about the blessing Hashem will give. A person serves Hashem properly, there'll be rain, the grass will grow for the animals, and you'll gather in your crops. So Rabbi Shmuel says, you see, there's a mitzvah in the Torah to gather your crops. A person's got to go to work. You work, and in your spare time you learn. That's Rabbi Shmuel's opinion. Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai says, no. You learn Torah, and other people do your work for you. Your work will be done by others. So the Gemara's bottom line is, the Gemara says, very interesting Gemara, the Gemara says, many people did like Rabbi Shimon, the lo al tabi adam. It didn't work. The system did not work. Many people did like Rabbi Shmuel, al tabi adam, and it worked. So the halacha is like Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi Shmuel says, you work and you learn. Not like Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. You see, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai's opinion was, you learn all day and someone else will work for you. What do you mean work for you? Who's going to work for you? Don't worry, I shall make a miracle. You have a tree will grow. You have a carob tree. You'll have a stream. And that's enough. Well, what do you need? So he went out and he started accusing people. So the Hashem says, go back in your cave. You didn't learn your lesson yet. So they went back into the cave. Yes.
A different time we had talked about a different rabbi who was blinded and someone went behind him to speak bad about.
The uncle of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, of Bar Koziva, Bar Kokhba.
And he refused to speak bad about the guy.
Yes. And that's what saved him.
Saved?
It was actually Herod. Herod, there's a rabbi in the time of Herod, and Herod was scared of the rabbis because they were all against him, because he was hurting the Jews. So he got this rabbi and he blinded him, and then he pretended to be an enemy of Herod and say bad things about Herod, and the rabbi refused to say anything bad. In fact, he said, the king of Israel should always praise the king. Herod said, if I'd have known the rabbis were like that, I would never have heard of them.
So isn't that a lesson that we're not supposed to speak?
You have to be very careful. It's a very important lesson. You have to be very careful because walls of years. But Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai was not scared of anyone. He just said what he felt. Well, anyway, listen. The truth is, the better thing is we got the Zohar out of this. So something good came out of it. It's interesting. So they wanted to kill him. He was saved. He's in the cave. But he comes out once and he's accusing everyone. You're working. These guys are working. They're not learning Torah. So he heard this voice, go back to the cave. They went back to the cave. Now this is a very interesting Gemara because we learn from here, how long do you say Kaddish when a person dies? Okay, we're coming to it now. This is a famous Gemara. So they went back in the cave and they dwelt there for 12 months. And they said, the sentence of evildoers in Gehinnom endures for no more than 12 months. So our sentence cannot be more than 12 months. If Russia is in Gehinnom for 12 months, our sentence must be also... We're not going to be in this cave more than 12 months for this, what we said. So they came out of the cave. But by the way, live from here. That's the opinion we follow. 12 months of Russia as in Gehinnom. We don't want to say Kaddish for 12 months because then we're saying our relatives are Russia. So we cut it down. So Ashkenaz, we do 11 months. Sephardi, we do 11 in 3 weeks. Right after we try and get
right?
So it's got to be different. So the Ben Ishchai says, why? Why do we say Kaddish? It says, number one, is the power of the Kaddish has two powers. When a person says Kaddish, there's two different things a person is doing. Number one is they're raising up. Number one is they're taking the person out of hell to go to heaven. Take him out. So the Kaddish is a power. When you sanctify God's name on behalf of someone, there's just the sanctification of God's name, which we learned in yesterday's parasha, and more. The mitzvah of Yikdash Nibitopo Neishel, to sanctify me amongst the nation. The Jews have to behave well. They have to sanctify God's name. So when a person says Kaddish, which is the highest mitzvah a person can do in this world, is to sanctify God's name. When a person sanctifies God's name, they're saving their relative from Gehinnom. Number two is, even if the relative is not in Gehinnom, it pushes them up high into the world above. So that's two purposes. So it's very big. So that's why we say we maximize Kaddish. We don't want to say 12 months completely, because then you're assuming that the relative is a Rasha. So you put it, it's Friday morning, 1 week less, that's it. So it's interesting. We learn it from this Gemara. So a heavenly voice came out. So first he said, we must get out of here. 12 months is more than enough. Heavenly voice runs out and says, come out from the cave. They come out of the cave. And then they see people working. People are working with their livelihoods. So it's interesting because Rabbi Lazar didn't learn his lesson. His son. He's much more fiery than his father. His father was calmer. And his father says to his son, the world has enough total devotees of Torah study in you and me. If just me and you are learning in the Kollel, it's enough. Let everyone else go to work. So the Talmud continues. As night began to fall late Friday afternoon, they saw an old man carrying two bundles of myrtles. And he was running home just before sunset. And they said to him, "Why do you have two bundles?" And he says, "These are in honor of Shabbat." So Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai asked him, he says, "But one bundle is enough to fragrance the house for Shabbat, to have a pleasant fragrance, the myrtles, hadassim." So he says, "One for Zachor and one for Shamor." One bundle for the mitzvah of remembering Shabbat, one bundle to keep Shabbat. Because there's two times in the Torah, as I mentioned, the Ten Commandments, once in Parshat Yitro, and once in Parshat Vayitchanan. Very good. So, the first time it says, Zachor et Yom HaShabbat l'kadosho, remember the Sabbath to make it holy. How do you remember Shabbat to make it holy? Machloket. Rambam says, by saying Kiddush. When you're saying Kiddush, you're remembering Shabbat to make it holy. When you say Havdalah, you're remembering Shabbat to make it holy going out. So Rashi says, you remember Shabbat to make it holy by counting the days of the week. Today is the first day to Shabbat. Tomorrow is the second day to Shabbat. That's why in Hebrew there are no names of the days. It's always Yom Rishon, Yom Sheni. You're counting up to Shabbat. Just like we count the Omer, we're counting up to Shavuot, we're counting up to Shabbat. And that's why when you say Shir Shel Hayom in the morning prayers, you'll see it says Hayom Yom Echad LeShabbat Kodesh. Today is the first day to Shabbat Kodesh. Second day to Shabbat Kodesh. Beautiful idea. Rashi's idea of sanctifying Shabbat. That means every day we're sanctifying Shabbat. Every day a person should remember today is how many more days for Shabbat. The first day to Shabbat. Second day to Shabbat. Third day to Shabbat. Beautiful. So that's Zachor. What is Shamor? So the second time the Torah brings down the Ten Commandments. It doesn't say Zachor. It says Shamor Yom HaShabbat LeKadosho. Remember, keep the Sabbath, make it holy. How do you keep the Sabbath? By keeping the laws of Shabbat. All the 39 forms of work. Prohibited work on Shabbat. So he sees this old man, two bundles, one for Zachor and one for Shamor. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai praises the Jewish people. Look how cherished the mitzvot are in the hands of the Jewish people. And they were appeased. That was the end of the story of this cave. They go back home. And Rabbi Pinchas ben Yair, there's a whole big discussion. Rabbi Pinchas ben Yair was one of the biggest tzaddikim. Some people say he was the father-in-law of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. Other people say he was the son-in-law of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. We have two versions, we don't know for sure. If he's the father-in-law of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, he was the son-in-law of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. The Gemara over here says he was the son-in-law of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. So if you go to the cemetery at Tzfat, anyone been to the cemetery at Tzfat? Where the Arizal is buried, and Rabbi Yosef Kara, all the greats are really amazing. Down below the mountain, they're buried on the mountain. And down below the mountain, there's a grave of Rabbi Pinchas ben Yair. Amazing story of Pinchas ben Yair. And Pinchas ben Yair, I'm going to talk about tomorrow, next Shabbat in my class on Eliyahu Navi. Has a little side issue of Elisha and whatever. And Rabbi Pinchas ben Yair ties it over there. So Rabbi Pinchas ben Yair heard that Rabbi Shimon came out from hiding. He went out to greet him. He took him, the first thing he does, takes him for a bath, the bathhouse. Roman bathhouse. And he had to massage his flesh. He saw there were cracks in Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai by having been staying in the sand for so long, it dried out his flesh. His flesh was all cracked and abrased. And Rabbi Pinchas started to cry, and his tears fell on the wound. Salt on the wound. Oh, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai started screaming.
That was the one that was in the cave, right?
Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai was in the cave. But his son-in-law goes to massage his father's back, his father-in-law's back, and he starts crying. So the father-in-law turns around and says, "Why are you crying? Stop crying!" And he says, "I don't want to see you in this state. I can't take to see you in this state." Rabbi Shimon says, "Ashrecha shiritani b'kach. Fortunate are you for having seen me like this. If had you not seen me like this, you would not know that I had so much Torah I learned in the cave. Because I grew tremendously in this cave. And fortunate, even though I have all these marks on my body, I'm happy that I went through this whole experience. It really helped me grow spiritually." So, Gam Zu L'Tova. The fact that he ran away in a cave, we have the Zohar came out of this experience. The Gemara continues. In the beginning, before Rabbi Shimon went into the cave, when Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai would pose a question, Rabbi Pinchas ben Yair would answer with 12 possible solutions. But when Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai was brilliant, 12 answers to one question, brilliant. In the end, after Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai is in the cave, When Rabbi Pinchas ben Yair would ask a question, Rabbi Shimon would give him 24 answers. So he came out much smarter than he went in. Okay, the Gemara finishes off. And the Gemara says a very interesting idea. It says, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai says, since a miracle was performed for me in this cave, I will go and do something to benefit the community. I want to make everyone rejoice. So today we make a Kiddush. You want everyone to rejoice with you. If something good happened to you, share the news. It's what's called Pritzumei Nisa. Advertise the miracle. So since something was done for me, Hashem made a miracle for me, I'm going to advertise this miracle. So what does he do? He said, and the Gemara now brings down, where is the source of this concept? So it says, when Yaakov was saved from Esav, Ve'avo Yaakov Shalem, he came back home intact. He came back to Israel after how many years? 22 years of being away from his parents. He comes back intact. Shalem b'kufo, intact in his body. Shalem b'mamono, intact in his wealth. Shalem b'torato, intact in his Torah knowledge. Vayichan et pnei ha'ir. He encamps before the city. What does he do? So number one, Rav says, our forefather Jacob established a new coin for the city. He made coinage for the city. Imagine, he invented this concept of coinage for that city. I don't know what a city was. And Shmuel says, Shvakim tiken. He made marketplaces in the city. Rabbi Yochanan says, he made bathhouses for the city. So in other words, to give thanks for a miracle, he established some sort of municipal benefit to the community. Amazing. When something good happens to you, you got to share it with others. Give other people benefit as well. It's amazing. Brilliant idea. So Rabbi Shimon goes to the leaders of the city of Tiberia and he asks them, what can I do to help the city? So they answer him, in those days, there were a lot of Kohanim, and the Kohanim were very, very careful about being pure, ritually pure. Yesterday's parasha, a Kohen can only defile himself for seven relatives. A Kohen can only go to defile himself for seven relatives, father, mother, sister, brother, son, daughter, and spouse. Right? He cannot define himself for anyone else. Cohen. High priest can only define himself for one person. And one only. No relatives at all. High priest, no relatives at all. Only for? A mate mitzvah. A mate mitzvah means someone who there's no one else to bury. If he finds a Jew on the street and there's no one to bury him, anyone, it's a mitzvah to bury that person. So the Kohen Gadol can even define himself for a mate mitzvah. It's an amazing, amazing idea. If there's no one to bury a Jew, even the Kohen Gadol can bury the Jew. He's not allowed to bury his own father because there's other people to look after the father.
That's amazing.
But so it's a tremendous mitzvah. Mate mitzvah is a tremendous mitzvah. In fact, there's organizations that bury people today. Jews who die with no money. So there's funds to help them buy a grave and help fund them. Amazing. It's a very big mitzvah. So it's a very big mitzvah. Free Burial Society. Jewish Free Burial Society. I think it's in Queens. Rabbi Zon. He's the head of it. A brilliant man. So a Jew dies with no place to bury, no one to bury him. Sometimes it's terrible. People are living on the breadline. No relatives. So there's organizations that look after them. Baruch Hashem, thank God for that. Thank God. So the Kohen Gadol can bury a mate mitzvah. In fact, that's the reason why we take the Kohen Gadol 7 days before Yom Kippur and we lock him up in a place in the temple. So he shouldn't go outside and maybe he'll find a dead person and needs someone to bury him and he'll get involved and he won't be able to serve in Yom Kippur. Can you imagine? He won't be able to be the Kohen Gadol in Yom Kippur and be defiled. So anyway, okay, let's move on. Let's finish the story. So what does he do? So they tell him there's a place in Tiberia where Kohenim cannot go because we're in doubt whether people are buried there or not. So what he did, he went and he did investigations. And he went around, looking around, and asking all people, is anyone buried over here? Is anyone? Until he purified the area. So the Kohanim were very grateful. The municipality was very grateful. Now it wasn't before. It was a no-go zone for Kohanim. Now he purified the area by doing investigations. Anyway, it's interesting. So that was how he paid back. He paid God back for this miracle. Beautiful, beautiful story. There's another couple of stories I want to share with you. Number one is a story. It's in Yelkut Shimoni. Great story. There was a couple who were married 10 years and everything was going well for them. Very wealthy, they loved each other, but only one problem, no children.
No children.
So in those days, It's halacha, no children. Get divorced. After 10 years, you give it 10 years. We learn it from Avraham Avinu, right? Avraham Avinu was living in Israel for 10 years. 70 years old, he moved to Israel. 80 years old, no kids. He tells his wife, what are you going to do? So it's interesting, living outside Israel doesn't count. It's living in Israel 10 years, that's when it counts. So she says, marry Hagar. And now, you know, instead of divorcing me, take another wife. So he gave a horrible thing to do, marry Hagar. We know you got Ishmael from that. We got all our troubles from that. So anyway, so from there we learn out. So Shulchan Aruch says, the halacha does not apply today. For some reason, it doesn't apply anymore. But at one time, it did apply. So he goes to Rosh Hashanah Baruch Hai. So listen, married 10 years, no children. I want to get divorced. What he should have done is go to Rosh Hashanah Baruch Hai and say, give me a bracha to have children. No, I want to get it. I want to get divorced. What do I do? So Rosh Hashanah Baruch Hai says, gives an amazing idea. Look at his idea. Look at his amazing advice. He says, you were happy when you got married? I was very happy. I had a beautiful wedding. He says, so make a party for your divorce. Invite everyone and make a beautiful party. Strange advice. So he said, listen, the rabbi said, make a party. He makes a big party. Calls it, a divorce party. He makes a divorce party. So everyone's there at the party, he's having a great time, they're eating and drinking, his wife's enjoying, they're enjoying it. He gets a little bit drunk. He got a little bit drunk at the party, and he tells his wife, he says, my beloved, he says, I really love you, he says, take whatever you want from this place, from my house. Take the most expensive item as a gift from me, as a parting gift from me. So, and then he falls asleep in his drunkenness. So he tells her servants, look at this story, amazing story. Take him now to my father-in-law's house. My father's house. He said, I can have the most precious gift. Take whatever you want. I'll take him. So she takes him. The servants to go. They take him. And they put him on the carriage. And they roll him to his father-in-law's house. And in the morning, the guy wakes up. Where am I?
Where am I?
And she says, do you remember the party you told me I can take whatever I want from the house? He said, the most precious thing I have, more than anything of my possessions, is you.
Oh, what a beautiful story.
One second, you didn't finish the story yet. Isn't it beautiful? It's beautiful. It's a really precious story. It's a very precious story. So he's moved. He's very moved. He says, I can't divorce this woman. How can I divorce her? Look, she could have taken all the money, she could have taken all the possessions, and she took me instead. Wow. She must really love me. Let's go. So he goes back to the rabbi. Tells him the whole story, and so Rabbi says, I bless you that you will have children. So they had children. Baruch Hashem, they had children. It's a beautiful story. The question is, why didn't the Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai in the first place give them a bracha for children?
Right.
So I think he was testing the waters. If there's real love or there's not real love. If there's real love, why will I break this marriage? Then I'll bless them with children. If it's not real love and they're ready to go through this without any even asking for children. So why should I bless them with children? So it's interesting. So it depends on the ratzon of the couple. If the couple really want children, on the other hand, today you've got to be practical. Had a case, unfortunate case, tragic case. They had one daughter. And then the guy goes to all the rabbis in the world for blessings and blessings and blessings. But not one rabbi told him that he goes to a doctor. Not one single rabbi told him to go to the doctor. And his wife was going for checkups, and she was crazy. She was going crazy. She wanted more children. So she was going, and she was going, and she was going. Finally, he went, and they tell him, it's you. Can't have children. And then it was too late. He says, I can't tell my wife. She'll kill me. It was his fault. I wish the rabbis would have told me to come to the doctor. So he went to the rabbis for brachot. Listen, rabbi's job is not to tell him to go to the doctor. Rabbi's job is to give him brachot. So he gave him bracha, but nothing happened. Because he didn't go to the doctor and do the practical stuff. So before you go for a bracha, try practical things. The bracha only falls on the practical thing. Make it successful. If you can do practical things. Suppose you've got to do practical things. Today it's amazing what they can do. Technology can do amazing miracles today. But you need the bracha and you need the miracle. You need both. You need the hishtadlut. So it's at least he had one daughter, Baruch Hashem. She has children, thank God. And he has grandchildren, thank God. But listen, a lot of things are in the hands of God. We don't know what to do. Okay. But a person's going to try and be as practical as possible. And then rely on that. Don't rely on miracles for no reason. You have to be practical and then rely and ask for a blessing as well on top of that. Okay, so those are two things. There's another story, and this is a story. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai had a dream. This dream happened on Rosh Hashanah. He had a dream on Rosh Hashanah, and his relatives, who were very wealthy, are going to, the government, the Romans, are going to go and confiscate from them 6,000 gold coins. 6,000 gold coins, you know? They must be very wealthy. They had a business selling linen, which are very, in those days, linen was the main material to wear in the hot countries. Cotton wasn't so advanced in those days, but linen was the main material. So he goes to them. He doesn't tell them about his dream. He goes to them and he says, I need a big donation from you. I need 6,000 gold coins from you. And they said, 6,000, are you crazy? 6,000 gold coins? So yes, I need you to give me 6,000 gold coins as a donation to the yeshiva, whatever it is, for the poor. 6,000 gold coins. So they give him 5,000 something. They don't give him the whole number, 6,000. So if they give him 5,994. Okay. That's the story. Give him six less. And it's okay.
Romans get the 6 coins.
So they go, and he goes, and then they get a bill in the mail from the IRS, the Roman IRS, 6,000 coins. We want 6,000 gold coins. So they come to Rosh Hashanah. You ask for 6,000. You see, the Romans ask, so if you'd have given me the whole 6,000, the whole thing would have been annulled. If you gave me six less, give me six more, and I'll get you out of this. So they give him six. They give him six gold coins. He goes to the head of the IRS, the Roman IRS, and he says, "Listen, why are you Romans picking on these poor Jews? they got a bill of 6,000. It's impossible. It's crazy. Here's six for you personally, and erase the debt." So that's what happened. He gave him six. They paid him off. He paid the guy six gold coins, and he erased the debt of 6,000. He said, because of the tzedakah you gave. Sometimes a person gives tzedakah and they don't really realize, but the tzedakah is taken away from other expenses. The more tzedakah a person gives, the less other expenses. There's going to be expenses anyway. So sometimes there's a decree from heaven to pay so much, and it goes to waste. It really goes to waste. It's better to give it to the right causes. So that's just another story of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. It's a beautiful story of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. So why would a person be happy that they're dying? Why are we happy? Since when do we make a big party when someone dies? Usually a rabbi dies. And we're very sad. You see outside. You light a candle, you're sad. But here we have this case. It's called the Hilula. Hilula is a party. Since when do we make a party when a rabbi dies? It became, by the way, it became a very big thing among Hasidim.
Yes, that's what Rabbi Yochai told us to do.
Well, not really. It came from the Arizal.
What?
It came from the Arizal.
Okay.
The Arizal was one of the biggest Kabbalists in the later generations. The Arizal lived around 580 years ago. The Arizal was born in Israel, in Yerushalayim. In fact, you can go and see the house that he's born in. I went there. It's in the Old City, in the Rova Yehudi, in the Jewish quarter. There's a place called the Museum, the Yeshuv Hayashan. It's the museum of the old, what's it called? Yeshuv Hayashan, the old settlement. Very interesting. You gotta go. You pay a few shekels to get in. Okay, everywhere you get a few shekels to get in. So it's interesting how you see how they lived in those days. Basically, what you have is you have four large rooms around an open courtyard. Amazing. Each of these four rooms is one apartment. One apartment. That room is an apartment. And they lived. Each family lived in a one room. So how do they split it up when you go to sleep? Your parents, children, what do you do? So they have partitions, movable partitions between the parents sleeping and the children sleeping. Where's the bathroom? And the bathroom is in the courtyard, shared bathroom. Disgusting. I don't know how they lived. Then where's the kitchen? In the courtyard. They shared a kitchen in the courtyard. All families, four families had to get along. Imagine four wives had to get along over there, sharing the bathroom, sharing the kitchen, sharing the... It was a hard situation, hard situation. That's how they lived. And one of these rooms today is a synagogue. That was the room in which the Arizal was born. His father was Ashkenaz. His father was Ashkenaz. Well, the great Luria family. And his mother was Sephardi. So what happened was, unfortunately, it says when he had his brit, the father everyone comes early for a brit. You want to do the brit as early as possible. Zrizim makdinin mitzvot. A zariz does a mitzvah fast. And the father says, I'm not doing the brit yet. So why not? Eliyahu Navi is not here yet.
God, he's still waiting.
He knew when Eliyahu... Man, how many people know if Eliyahu Navi is going to be there or not? So he didn't do the brit till 4 p.m. He says, now we can do the brit because now I see Eliyahu Navi. Very strange. So that's the story. And he, so he did. They did the brit 4 p.m. Eliyahu Navi is there, and very few people are there because everyone went to work. So it's a small brit, and that was the brit. But eventually, what happens is, 2-3 years old, he loses his father. Father passed away, and the mother's left pretty much destitute. But she has a rich brother in Egypt. She takes her son to Egypt, and that's where he grows up. He grows up in Egypt, the Sephardim in Egypt, and he learns with the chief rabbi of Egypt, Rabbi David ben Zimra, the Radbaz. Very, very prolific writer, very brilliant man. He lived to about 104 years old, the Radbaz, great, great rabbi. And Rav Moshe Cordovero was one of the students of Radbaz, was also a big Kabbalist. So he studied over there in the yeshiva, and eventually he worked for his uncle. He was a night guard, night watchman. His uncle owned warehouses on the ports of Egypt, Alexandria. And he would be the night watchman of the ports. And when he was watching these things, he had revelation. He started getting revelations. Eliyahu Navi. And he became one of the top Kabbalists at that time. And at the age of 36 or so, he moves to Sfat. And he's only in Sfat for 2 years. And all the greats come to his classes. Imagine, he's giving shiurim. And people are just blown away by this man. One of his major students was Rav Chaim Vital. Rav Chaim Vital is 56 years old. He's 20 years older than Ariza. And he's coming to learn. First he heard he was a big Kabbalist, but yeah, I know more than him. Let me go and ask him some questions. He went to ask him some questions, and Arizal, he overwhelmed him. Just he didn't understand all these things. He knew so much that no one else knew. So he became his main disciple, one of his disciples. But everyone started coming to him. Or Rabbi Yosef Karo, who was the author of the Shulchan Aruch, who was in his 80s and 90s, came to him also. And he would go sleep in his classes. So he tells him, this class is not for you. This is you're not meant to be a Kabbalist. You go back and learn your pshat. So everyone has their soul is from different places. Everyone has their own things to do, and this is not your major tikkun in this world. Your tikkun is to learn write the Shulchan Aruch and learn Gemara. Your major tikkun is not to learn the Kabbalah. So anyway, so it's interesting. That's Arizal, and the Arizal started this practice of going to Meron on Lag BaOmer. It wasn't so widespread. What's going on? The Arizal started it, and he himself started the custom of giving his son a haircut on Lag BaOmer. He would take him to Meron, took his whole family to Meron, and one year he took his students to Meron, and they were dancing in Meron. And when they're dancing, this old man comes out, never saw before. It's very tall, dark man with a big turban comes out, and he starts dancing with Arizal. And one of the students of the Arizal was a guy called Rabbi Lazar Askari, who was the author of the Sefer Haridim, a very, very important Musar work. And they pulled him into the circle. He started dancing with three. So the three people were dancing: the Arizal, this old man, and Rabbi Yehuda Askari. So After they stopped dancing and this guy disappeared, the old man disappeared. They asked Ariza, who is that old man? He said, that was Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. That's the story. So from that time on, he says, this is the day on which we rejoice the death of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. So why are we rejoicing Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai's death? And the answer is because tremendous amounts. On that last day of his life, he had tremendous revelation. And they learned a lot on that last day that they were celebrating it. The light of the Torah says there was a fire around his house. No one could even come in. And just the students who got this tremendous amount of knowledge. And that's the celebration. So he himself says, apparently according to Arizal, that don't mourn when I died. Celebrate when I died. Because I achieved my tikkun in this world. I fixed my tikkun in this world. We talked about it yesterday, also when Eliyahu Navi went up to heaven. All the students knew this is the day he's going to go. So the question is, why didn't they pray for him to stay? So that he says, because there's two reasons why a person goes. Number one is because they reach a certain level where they can't achieve any more in this world. So then it's a happy day. And that's why it says the students of the Eliyahu Navi, they wanted to figure out, is it time to pray for him to stay more, or is it a happy day? And the answer they got was a happy day. That's why they didn't pray for him to stay longer. So the time where he fulfilled his mission in this world, come on, it's a happy day. The purpose of a person in this world is to be born to fulfill your mission. If you fulfill your mission, it's a time for rejoicing. So that's the Hilula, and that's the reason why we celebrate, and that's the reason why people like bonfires, even though I don't agree, it's not very, it's very bad pollution, and so there must be a better way of doing it. Use LED lamps instead of fire. Like Bomer, yeah. Well, why do they light the fire? The fire is a representation of the fire, the light of the Torah that we got from the Arizal. We got from the Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. The light of the Torah is tremendous. We got the Zohar, which means light. So that's the light we're trying to propagate, is this concept of burning fires. Okay, we're going to stop here. And happy Mother's Day to everyone, but every day is Mother's Day.
Amen. Yeah. Oh,